Andrew.
And I'm Kim. And today with us, we have Zan Johannes, who is a theater tech teacher.
Hello.
Hello, Zan. How are you tonight?
I am doing pretty good. I am tired, but that is okay. I am here and ready to go.
Excellent. Long day back after a nice long Christmas break for you?
Yes. It's the first week back after winter break at school, and it's always rough trying to get back into the swing of things after being able to relax for a while. Not to mention, like, the kids are completely unmotivated. I'm completely unmotivated. So it ends up being a very long week of getting back into our routine.
What are the ages of the kids?
The school I teach at is 6 through 12. There is a little bit of separation from, like, the middle school of 6 through 8 and the high school of 9 through 12, but I actually teach all of those grades in some fashion or another.
All right. I was going to say, there's definitely a difference if it's, like, you know, college-age kids or...
It's a middle school-high school hybrid.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't know if it's possible for a college person to be less motivated, but back when I was that age, coming back from Christmas break, I definitely did not want to do anything.
Definitely.
I think coming back is better than going into, but even so, it's still rough.
Fair. For me, it's not been quite as bad. We have, like, over the Christmas time, like, all of the people I was trying to help kept taking vacations. And so my cases started piling up because I just had, like, I tried to call them and they wouldn't be there to do anything. Or, like, the person I needed to do the thing wouldn't be there. And so there's all this back and forth. And, like, I was getting a lot of cases. And I was getting really frustrated because I was like, I can't ever freaking close these dang things. And so... Since coming back, like, all these people are around and I can actually, like, do things and talk to them. So that's been really nice.
It was kind of the opposite for me. Oh. Whereas, like, there wasn't anybody to make a case or a ticket.
Mm.
So all of our tickets just plummeted, which allowed us to do some nice project work. But it's definitely picking up again. But it felt like we were able to, you know, take care of some things that were piling up. And now we're ready to face the onslaught again.
Well, that's good. Yeah. To be prepped and ready to go.
This year in 2019 is starting off with a bang. CES is going on at the time of this podcast, but there's some stuff that's going to definitely be moving all the way into 2019 and even further on. A lot of big name people, you know, CES is like a big conference where basically anyone that does tech gets together in Las Vegas.
Mm.
Used to be just kind of like one location, but now it's like everywhere.
Oh.
They like rent out pretty much all of Las Vegas, and it's just this big consumer show.
Very cool.
Wow.
Yeah,
and what does
it's really cool.
What does it stand for?
The kind of like tech that you see there. I mean, it's all the way from like robots to like automatic driver. I mean, it's awesome. What were you saying?
I'm looking up to see what CES stands for.
Ah, Consumer Electronics Show.
Hey, thanks.
I believe. Two of the things, though, that I'm kind of interested in, and I think are going to hit the biggest kind of audience,
mm-hmm.
is one, Apple,
mm.
like in a big reversal of what they've usually done, have kind of started to hint that they're going to allow, or they're going to have other TV manufacturers and other people have Apple TV on their products.
Oh, wow.
What?
That's really
so
surprising.
Huge.
Yeah, like before this, like you would pretty much have to have an Apple device
mm-hmm.
in order to have anything Apple.
Right.
But now, and they kind of hinted in the past that there was a possibility they'd be doing a TV, but a lot of people are thinking they don't want to get into that market, compete with, you know, people like Samsung and Sony and
LG,
people that have a legitimate, you know, foothold in the industry.
Interesting.
So it seems like now if you get a new smart TV coming out in the next couple years, or even this year, there's a good chance you're going to see Apple TV as like an app built into it.
Interesting.
Huh.
As like a, something that you would have to get extra or something that was built in to the TV itself?
Kind of like built into it. Like if you were to like want to cast to it or something, kind of like Google Cast, that kind of thing.
Huh.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Apple doesn't play with anyone, so that's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're realizing that they need to, I think, open up a little bit more in today's world.
Yes, absolutely.
And kind of along the same lines with TV, one of the cool things I saw that got announced is that there are, I think Samsung is the one that is developing and releasing curved TVs.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, like, but they're, like, not curved as in, like, slightly curved, like, horizontally, but vertically.
Yeah.
Like, you can, like, drape it over, like, a wall or something.
Mm.
Like, it acts almost kind of like a fabric in a way.
Oh, that is not what I was thinking at all, because I remember they came out with, like, that, like, horizontally, like, concave TV a while back, talking about, like, it being a more immersive experience or whatever, but, like, a vertically almost fabric, they said? Wow.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's displays like that, so you're probably not going to really see it in a home.
Yeah.
But it's going to create some really cool functionality, like, on the side of buildings and stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
That, and then they have their 8K TV, which I think is just going insane.
Whoa.
Because they even said there is no 8K content
no.
right now.
Well, of course not.
Barely, it doesn't exist. There's barely 4K at this point.
Yeah. And my big question is, unless you're looking at, like, a giant, like, 100-inch TV, are you going to see the difference between a 4K and an 8K TV?
I can't imagine.
I mean, I know that I'm not, like, a TV guru, but I can barely tell the difference between, like, 1080p and 4K. Like, I really can't.
I would say most people couldn't. Like, you know, 2K and 4K or whatever.
Yeah.
It's,
no.
It's, I can't.
I can't tell the difference either.
1080p and, like, 2K. Yeah, I can kind of see, but.
That's weird.
Wow. But yeah, that's the fun news. There's going to be a lot more
Be
announced. I would encourage anyone that's interested in tech just to, once you hear this podcast, go out and see what was talked about, what was released, and there's always a fun, like, little top 10 things that you can look at, so.
Yeah. It just blows my mind, like, the things that you're like, oh, we don't need that, that's ridiculous, and I know in, like, 4 years it's going to be all over the place and everyone's going to be wanting it, and I'm just like, why do we need 4K? Oh, but it's everywhere. Okay.
Right.
Whatever.
Oh, wait, I guess we need this now. Oh, you stopped making everything else? Okay.
It's serviceable. Yeah. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
I'm not a great tech person because I don't do bleeding edge. I just do, like, I will make it good enough for my needs. My needs right now are to record this podcast, so my computer is sufficient. But anyway, the needs of a theater troupe, however, might be a little bit different. What is the basics of a theater that need to be included in order to run a show in this day and age?
Right. The needs that you will have to create a production are going to vary greatly, obviously, on the size of the production that you're trying to put on. But
sure.
The needs are becoming more and more technological, regardless of that size, it seems. It used to be like, all right,
oh, really?
Point a couple lights at this place and we're good to go. Or we have a boombox playing a CD. Awesome. But it's becoming more and more integrated with each other and with, like, the rest of the elements as well. So like, the few basic areas that you might have are anything that's controlled on stage. So if you have any sort of automation for your scenic elements, anything coming on and off stage or being brought up and down in and out. There are a lot of, obviously, professional situations like Broadway and off-Broadway touring productions that will have, rather than people moving different set pieces, they'll have automated systems with all these different motorized power trains moving set pieces around. And obviously that's all controlled by various software made specifically for that. That's not something I deal with very much because working for a school.
You mean the high school doesn't have motorized moving sets?
No,
come on.
No, as much as I wish that we could deal with something like that, that's not quite in our purview. But it is very cool. So if you have anything like that, that's going to be on stage. And then you have lighting and any sort of lighting fixtures that need to be controlled with various, like I said, again, like software and hardware, depending on the types of lights you have. And then sound. So any microphones or various inputs from instruments or other issues with, like, sound effects or things that are pre-recorded, all kind of integrating in together. And those are pretty much the three main areas where you're going to end up with more technological side stuff. And then, like, if you really want to get into how a lot of stuff is created, like set pieces or lighting equipment are kind of manufactured, even there's a whole lot of other stuff in there. Like, there's a huge market for like, now 3D printing and CNC and all sorts of stuff in terms of manufacturing. But that's less of what I do in this realm than running everything.
So are all of these, like all these things that are being controlled by something, by someone, are they kind of all in the same area usually? Is there kind of one central control room?
It totally depends on the theater. The ones that I deal with, yes, there's usually a central booth, as they call it, or, you know, your tech booth or control booth. And typically lighting and sound will be housed in there. If there's any sort of onstage automation, usually that's going to be housed somewhere on stage or backstage for ease of making sure everything goes well and you have a better line of sight and access to what might be happening. And then you'll have...
Harder to do from the wings.
Right, from far away. Because usually this control booth is going to be somewhere in the back of the audience.
Yeah.
That would make sense. So as far as lights go, you were saying that it depends on what kind of lights you have.
Yeah.
That it depends on what kind of lights you have. And how does all of that work? Like back in my day, it was just like basically you had light switches and like you would turn them on or off and you'd have to have somebody sitting up there all the time doing the thing. How is that
or
different?
Like even like at the theater that I was up at college with. Like the lights seem to be controlled by this, like just almost like big switches. So yeah, like is that kind of still the case? What are the different types of controls that you see with those?
Yeah. So like if we're talking super duper old school, you would have like these giant, like almost like Frankenstein-esque throw the switch levers. And that was like stuff.
Yes.
yeah.
My favorite.
Yes. They're a lot of fun to work with, but man, they have their massive limitations. And that's not something that you're going to see a whole lot of anymore. There are still a couple of theaters like around where I work that have those old schools that haven't been renovated in decades might have something like that. But that's typically not something you're going to be seeing in a higher production value situation. You're going to have two kind of types of lighting scenarios, either a kind of like a conventional light fixture where a computerized like switchboard, like small switchboard with like little sliders will use a semiconductor to help control the voltage that is being applied to the light. More voltage means that like it's brighter, less voltage means it is dimmer. With no voltage going through, meaning it is off. And so that's kind of like an analog version of that. It's still considered computerized, and you can still utilize software to like program those things so that it always goes back to the same point, or you have cues that have different effects and fade up and down and flash or move, all that kind of stuff. That's pretty typical for...
Okay. So a lot of times it's an analog control system that has some digital elements kind of overlaid almost.
Yes. Yes.
Kind of like a lot of cars nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you have like a digital system that's actually moving an analog thing in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good analogy for it. But more and more, there's a lot of lighting fixtures out there rather than just being kind of plugged into the system and having that more analog control to it. They are controlled through a digital protocol called DMX 512.
DMX 512?
Yes.
Okay. What's that mean?
So DMX stands for digital multiplex, and 512 is the number of channels of information that a single cable of this protocol can carry, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So in theory, you could have 512 little bits of information being sent back and forth at a time.
Correct. 100% correct.
Gotcha.
I'd imagine that helps out. Like, you know, in the old days, you'd have to probably have someone moving a camera by itself. But nowadays, you can, you know, either control or probably live with the joystick, I'm guessing, camera, computer, or even just program in ahead of time what the lights are supposed to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what's really nice about that is that it's so easily programmed out. Like once you know how that protocol works, it is a piece of cake to say, oh, I want it to do this. Oh, I want it to do that. And of course, you know, there's always a chance that something will go screwy and you need to like go back and check your work in terms of like assigning things. But it's It really is a very simple program, not program, language, I guess, so, to use. Yeah.
Kind of segueing into the next kind of topic here, then, when there's a central language like that, usually in tech I see that also has an aspect of something that corresponds to it. So when it comes to sound, does all the sound equipment and controls, does that use something in the like software suite of DMX 512?
Sound typically does not use DMX. It can, and as again moving more towards a digital type scenario, because again we have like older analog sound systems where you had to plug everything individually into a port. So if you had 15, you know, different inputs, you had to have 15 different control sliders in order to make those work. That's changed now a little bit, and I'll get into that in a moment. But there is, sound isn't as much my expertise, but to my knowledge, there isn't as much a centralized language protocol like that for sound, because the signal works differently, because it's actually carrying not just like information, but it's also the actual sound signal that's being transferred. It works a little bit differently than the DMX lighting protocol does.
Is there, well, I suppose, I don't know if I said that right when I asked you, but is there kind of like a central software that's used that houses all these? Yeah. Or is there like two separate computers? Or separate boards, so to say.
Usually they're
that are really not interacting with each other at all.
It again kind of depends on the show and your capabilities. Typically you're going to have them be on separate pieces of hardware with separate softwares, just because there are completely different needs for the two different things. But there is software out there that can control both. One of the pieces of software that I use typically for sound and for video projection is QLab, which is a really one of the more affordable and for its price, very flexible pieces of equipment, pieces of software for that stuff.
Okay.
But it does utilize, it does have like a lighting suite in it as well, that you can run the different lighting things from like your laptop rather than some sort of control board.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily what would be best for a lot of productions, because of the complexity of the various cues, and having one person to try to control all of those things at once can stack up very quickly.
So when it comes to the sound, then, and you have all these different sources coming in, you know, if you have orchestra, you have that. If you have the people on stage, you have that. You probably have a lot of sound effects and even audio that's done off stage. Is all this usually done with one person or one team? Are there different people doing it? What's the control system? Can you elaborate a little bit on how all that's worked out?
Yeah. So in terms of setting it all up, it's definitely going to be a team of people making sure that everything is connected properly and routed to, you know, its proper location and all that stuff. But when it comes to actually running it during the show, you're probably not going to have too many people involved in it. One or two people to run the actual sound console, maybe a handful of people to run and take care of other sound needs. If there's like microphones that need to be like on people, like body mics, or if anything needs to be adjusted backstage, a couple people to do that. But once everything is hooked up and taken care of, it's not terribly hard to have just a small handful of people manning everything.
And I suppose you probably wouldn't want to have a lot of people manning things, because if you have, you know, too many people with different opinions on how things should be going, then it's probably just going to sound horrible.
Yeah, it very easily becomes a too many cooks in the kitchen scenario.
Ah, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, I've been in scenarios where multiple people want to run all the sound and it gets to be a little messy.
Yeah. And I mean, as you guys know, working in a largely audio medium, everyone has their own style and process for doing everything. So, you know, you might have one person who comes in and says, oh, this is exactly how I do all my presets, and then I don't touch them, and then we only adjust if we need to. And then someone else who comes in and says, nope, I have to make sure that I ride the levels and sound check every single mic every single time and make sure that nothing is going to go wrong. And it's not that either way is necessarily wrong or right, but everyone has their own opinion on it. So keeping the number of opinionated people to a minimum when working is probably better.
So you were saying that you can do this all theoretically through a computer. Like, what kind of hardware does it take beyond the actual lights and like mics and things?
If you are running things, if you're running from a computer, then you essentially, you need whatever the software is going to require of you is what it comes down to. Personally, I run QLab. I run it off of a MacBook Pro. I don't know the specs off the top of my head, but I do run it off a laptop because it's a laptop that I take from location to location with me in different theaters and different places that we might be doing shows. If you have a more stationary thing, you know, a desktop would be good. But typically, the different aspects, especially...
So do you have to...
Sorry, go ahead.
Do you still have to have like the mixer boards and the... basically the all of the analog pieces there, or is that only if your lights are that old that it takes that? No, can you theoretically just USB plug everything into a computer now?
Not to the on a very, very small scale, yes. but you so like if you were a DJ, for example, you had a dozen lights, you could control them all. There is a DMX like software, I think it's just called MyDMX, that you can have on your computer, and it functions the same as a like physical lighting console that you might get.
Okay.
But it's relatively limited in terms of power, so you don't want to necessarily use that for a show that has
a full-on theater,
right? 300 plus cues with 5 dozen lights.
Sure.
So in that case, you really do need some sort of proprietary console, and there are a couple of dozen, well, maybe not a couple dozen, about a dozen different companies out there that have their different ways of, you know, creating a layout for a board or the way that it talks to everything. Everything uses the same language, but it all has like maybe a different process for programming and a different way that the lights are going to like physically connect to it. And every, you know, again, every technician is going to have their opinions about which one is better and what works best, but
so the theater world is just like every other version of the tech world where everybody has their own opinions and there's 18 different things to do this one option.
Oh my gosh, yes. There's always like the number of like different like forums and groups that I'm a part of, there's always some sort of hot debate going on about why X is better than Y.
Good to hear that that doesn't change regardless of your profession.
Yeah, that's pretty universal.
Oh, goodness. So in theory, you have to have like their specialized whatever to go with it as far as like a soundboard. Are these all like touchscreen now, or do they still have like the digital or the analog levers and sliders and things?
It's usually a combination anymore. If you're getting a brand new console of some sort, you're going to be working with a large number of like physical sliders that you can move up and down, but there's usually going to be some sort of like readout screen that is either touch screen or has like buttons attached to it that you can alter things. And a lot of almost all new digital boards now have some sort of app or iPad / tablet connection that they can go through.
Of course.
Oh, nice.
One of the like touring theaters in the area, we do a handful of shows there every year, and it's great for the audio technician to be able to be back in the control booth and set everything, but then take the tablet out into the audience and mix the audio from where the audience is going to be hearing it, so we can really key into the correct sound and balance and mix of everything. And the same thing with the light.
And even if you have like a sound booth like in the middle of the audience, this would allow you to go to the different spots that the audience are sitting where it's not optimized, just to make sure that things aren't just completely off balance.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Nice.
So it's a nice combination of like the old familiar technology as well as all these new advancements. It's possible that at some point it might go completely into the everything's on a touch screen, everything's on a tablet, but something about the theater technician world is that everyone is very set in their ways and very hesitant to give up the things that they're familiar with, regardless of new technology.
Of course.
So I don't know if that ever happens, how quickly it would.
I like knobs and sliders, dang it.
Pretty much.
Well, is there anything else kind of like in the realm of IT that you find interesting or exciting on the cutting edge, things that are kind of on the future but haven't really come in yet?
Oh, man. Yeah, so like projections are like the new big thing that's being integrated into theatrical performances.
You're not talking about like the Christmas lights that you see projected onto the side of a house, are you?
Oh, gosh.
No. a little more advanced than that. Something as simple as there being an image of sorts serving as like a backdrop that's being projected, to something as complex as fully mapped and interactive media that the performers can like be integrated into being projected onto stage.
So holograms.
Almost, yeah. So like we're talking like crazy intense holograms, like a lot of those, like, I don't remember what concerts it was that had holographic
Tupac
people.
Is back.
That's what it was. It was Tupac. That's right. So yeah, that's like super, super way advanced. But even just a step back from that, a lot of professional shows and even semi-professional shows are starting to utilize projections as a full-on scenic element. So not just we have a video playing over here. Because when I first like encountered projections, that's pretty much what it was. It was, we want to incorporate a video clip into this performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was that kind of integration. But more and more, it's becoming more of a scenic element. Trying to think what I saw recently. Two things. Anastasia, which is currently a musical on Broadway, is making really phenomenal use of projections as they have just a handful of like walls that obviously have like built scenic elements, but like the windows you would see through them, they're projected on from the rear to look like a scene outside. And it's almost impossible, unless you're really paying attention to it, to tell the difference between that and the actual built piece of scenery that's next to it. Curious really Incident neat. Of the Dog in the Nighttime was another one where they did a grid that's projected on four surfaces, like the floor and then the back wall and the two side walls of this theater space that like draws out things, and they almost like dance. There's a choreography to it where they dance around with these mapped images that creates an entirely new experience for the storytelling aspect of things.
Sure.
And I think
I didn't realize that was on Broadway, but that particular book, there's a lot of really kind of strange elements to it. So that would make a lot of sense to be able to make it weird.
there's a moment where like the main character gets a complete sensory overload, and the way that the projections and the lighting, like they go like completely fuzzy and like distort in a way that it completely changes the setting.
Just add an atmosphere to the whole.
Yeah, definitely. It's truly becoming, I like to think of every element within the theater as another way to advance and tell the story a little bit more. You know, you have your actors who are saying the words and doing the movements, and you have the lights that are bringing focus and all that stuff. The setting, by providing the different pieces that you might see and telling us where you are, et cetera. But projections literally like pushing that envelope one little bit further. And I'm really excited to see where that technology is going to take us in the next couple of years.
That's really cool. I honestly had no idea when I brought you in, like what theater tech we would end up talking about. So
yeah, no, that's awesome. Like I'm thinking over in my head all the different plays that I've seen and just like what you could have done that I never thought of at the time, like even just as simple as extending sets.
Oh, sure. You could extend it out into the audience more, or make the orchestra fit something not as distracting all kinds of fun stuff.
Well, usually we like to offer our guests an opportunity to plug something of theirs. Do you have a podcast or something that you want to talk about?
Is your store up yet?
It is not, but it should be by the end of January, beginning of February. So depending on when this goes live. But I'll plug that, sure. So I will, if not already, soon to have an Etsy store open where I make fun like dice trays and little containers and things for all of your tabletop gaming needs. The name is Farrier Game Forge, if you are interested.
Ooh,
in finding
that. Name.
Thank you. It is actually named after my very first TTRPG character.
Aww.
So
yeah, Zan made an amazing giant D20 that if you looked on my Twitter feed over the last few weeks, I was giving it away. And it's just amazing. I absolutely love it. And I really didn't want to have to give it away. But now I'm just waiting for the Etsy shop to open up so I can get another one.
Yeah, so I'll have that open, like I said, hopefully at the end of January, beginning of February, assuming that the next show that I'm doing doesn't go completely haywire. But
awesome.
Yeah, or I'm also on Twitter. My handle is Covered in Sawdust, so that's my
just an N, not an I N.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Covered N Sawdust, because there were too many letters.
Oh, that's what happened. I tried to point somebody to your Twitter and I was like, why is it not coming up?
Yeah, because it was one letter too long. And it, rather than like eliminating the U or an E somewhere, I just, you know what? Covered in sawdust sounds good too.
Eh,
close enough.
It works.
Yeah.
Very good. So as always, you can find Service Desk in all of the places. If you search for Service Desk Podcast, we turn up in the Googles. It's quite fantastic. And if you would like to send us a more direct question, you can address that to servicedeskpodcast@gmail.com. And we will respond to you there. I know there was a Twitter question that came in that we didn't get to this time, but we will pick that up next episode.
Make sure to comment and rate us anywhere you listen to us, especially on iTunes, please.
Yes, and Podchaser is a fun place to go as well to look up other podcasts that are equally fun.
Well, I'm Kim.
And I'm Andrew.
And we are your techie friends.